Welcome into a brand new episode of the Calling It Podcast, recording trade deadline day, at least in 2020, Monday, August 31st, just past the top of the 5 o'clock hour. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We are, as always, powered by CLNS Media, and it is trade deadline day. So to help us out, I think, I don't know if this is the second year in a row or second time in 3 years, whatever, but this guy always joins us for the trade deadline. He's the host of the Hardcore Baseball Podcast for 98.5 The Sports Hub, Matt McCarthy. Matt, how's it going?
Guys, you know, listen, it's funny. I woke up today and I was like, oh, it's the trading deadline in baseball. It's like, it's so weird. Normally I count down to the trading deadline like a kid on Christmas, but it kind of stumbled upon us this year with the way that everything's going in the world. But otherwise, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
So let's start right here. I will narrow in on the Red Sox in a little bit, but just, you know, there's a lot of speculation given everything going on with the season and COVID. Would this be a more active year? Would this be a less active year than usual? Were you surprised at the way things kind of went around the league?
A little bit. I mean, I think the San Diego Padres are the real surprise. I mean, you know, being this aggressive at a deadline in a COVID year, you know, struck me, you know, in a big way. I mean, listen, I'm not surprised that we did have some activity. And I think, you know, around most of the league, you saw a lot of smaller moves. You know, the Clevinger trade seemed to be the biggest trade. So maybe you didn't have the, you know, the three or four blockbusters that you could normally expect at a certain trading deadline. But this deadline didn't disappoint for activity, you know, or at least when it comes to activity. So I'll take it as a baseball fan in a year that's kind of weird. There's a lot to talk about, and there's a real storyline in baseball. It's the San Diego Padres and how aggressive they are. Like, man, they're going for it. Like, they're really going for it. So, you know, in some ways, this deadline was more interesting than some others, just based on the actions and activity of one team.
And one of the guys who was dealt in that, you know, to the Padres was Mitch Moreland, of course. And I think over the past few years, you know, Red Sox fans have been upset with some acquisitions made by the front office. Moreland, though, was one of those guys who, you know, had a lot of value. You look back at his past 3 years, that seems like one of the better signings the Red Sox have made dollar for dollar. Would you agree with that? And what did you think of the deal itself?
Yeah, I mean, listen, when they first signed Mitch Moreland, I remember being big in the Eric Hosmer camp. And I'm like, well, why would you sign Mitch Moreland when you should just go out and spend big money on Eric Hosmer? And boy, was I wrong about that. You know, Mitch Moreland ended up being the perfect pro, the consummate professional, and a really, really important part of the Red Sox when he was healthy. You know, he was a limited player. You know, you didn't really want him playing against lefties, and he could never really stay healthy. But he was a clutch hitter. He was a great pinch hitter. He was the perfect role player when he was healthy, and a good defensive first baseman to boot, a really good defensive first baseman to boot. You know, there were never any problems when Mitch Moreland played first base for this team. And you talk about one of the most important members of the 2018 World Championship team. You need guys like that. You need guys like a Mitch Moreland. And, you know, somebody, you know, put up his stats in comparison to Mike Napoli. And you talk about two guys who, you know, had such an impact on two of the most important teams in recent memory for the Red Sox. And they're kind of similar, right? You know, I mean, you've got a situation where you bring in this veteran who had been a good player in the league, but nothing truly spectacular. And something here just clicked with him. And listen, he was a really valuable member of this team for 4 years. I think now is the appropriate time to move on, you know, as this team truly enters a rebuilding phase. And, you know, I mean, I feel like they got decent value for a guy who, you know, listen, it does have his limitations as a player, is important on a team that's going to try and win a championship. And that's what the Padres are going to do. But also, you know, he's an impending free agent. So when you get the 16th and 19th best players in a team system, in a team with a really loaded farm system in the San Diego Padres, like, I'll take it. I mean, I think that was good return and good value. Nothing but good feelings about the Mitch Moreland experience and the Mitch Moreland departure. This worked out as well as the Red Sox ever could have hoped.
So I want to ask you about some of the players who are still with the Red Sox. First off, Xander Bogaerts and Christian Vasquez, you know, relatively younger guys under team control. I see them holding on to those guys to the deadline as an indication that they don't plan on this rebuild being a long thing. They plan to be back in contention soon when those guys are under contract. Am I reading that right?
Well, you should read that that way, Alex, because the Boston Red Sox cannot enter a long-term rebuild. You know, they cannot do that. They can't do what the Cubs or the Astros did, or any one of these teams in baseball, the White Sox, that have gone through these year-long rebuilding processes. This is Boston. That doesn't fly here. And with their resources, the Boston Red Sox should never, ever enter a phase where they are truly stripping it down and rebuilding. You want to do it on the fly? You want to do it over the course of a year? Yes, that's the way to do it. That's what I hope they're doing here. But I also think that, you know, holding on to those two guys is just an indication. Well, I think it's a little different. I don't think they ever should have considered trading Bogarts. I think they don't really ever considered it. I mean, I think that, listen, if you would have been blown away, they probably would have done it. But I don't think they ever really took that, you know, really that seriously. Vasquez is a different story. And I think, you know, they were in a position where they would have dealt Vasquez had the deal been right. But that deal wasn't out there. And I'm happy about that, too, because I'm not giving up on Christian Vasquez. I'm not unloading him for the sake of unloading him the way you did with Kevin Pillar or Mitch Moreland. And again, I think they got more from Moreland than just Pillar, which is just an unload. Or even, you know, Hembree and Workman. I mean, that was a true just unload, take a flyer, see what you can get. Vasquez is under team control, and he's a starting catcher in the big leagues. That's a hard, it's a hard thing to come by. It is. You know, a quality starting catcher in Major League Baseball, you know, those guys don't grow on trees. So I didn't want them to give away Vasquez. Listen, if you got a great return for him, I mean, I'd certainly do it because I don't think he's a, you know, he's a world changer or anything like that. But is he the type of guy that you want to have on the next great Red Sox team? Sure, absolutely. So I'm pleased with the way that they handled both Bogarts and Vasquez. I think they're relatively different situations. Bogarts is the center of your core moving forward, all right? You don't get rid of that guy. You at least listen on Vasquez, and the deal would have to be right. That deal wasn't out there, apparently, so I'm happy they held on to Vasquez. I'm happy the way they handled both of those situations.
And then one more guy who's still here is Jackie Bradley Jr. Why?
I don't know. I don't know. Listen, Jackie Bradley Jr. should have been non-tendered last offseason. You know, they should not have tendered him a contract. My sense is, Alex, that the reason Jackie Bradley Jr. is still here is that there was truly no value and no market for him. I mean, listen, you move Kevin Pillar, who's, I would argue, a better player than Bradley. All right. You know, you're talking about, you know, a very good defensive outfielder, defensive center fielder. I think Pillar gives you more at the plate. You move Pillar for a player to be named later and international bonus money. All right. So, you know, that's not a lot. It's fine, you know, for what Pillar is. And I'm happy with that return. You know, I mean, add some firepower to your international signing capabilities. But, you know, Pillar is what? Yeah, $4 million. Bradley's 11, so you prorate it until the end of the year. Like, if there was a team out there that needed defensive help in the outfield or needed a fourth outfielder, Kevin Pillar is so much more valuable, and they barely got anything for him. So that indicates to me that there was no market for Jackie Bradley Jr. And I can't say I'm surprised that there isn't a market. I'm just surprised the Red Sox thought he was worthwhile holding on to in the first place. And that I criticize them more for tendering him a contract last offseason, putting $11 million on the books when you could have just walked away at that point, because Jake Marisnyk went for essentially nothing. You know, Kevin Pillar went for essentially nothing. I mean, Pillar waited until February to sign with the Red Sox, and then he gets traded for essentially nothing. So it goes to show you what the value is for that defensive outfielder, fourth outfielder, fifth outfielder type. The market just isn't that strong for those guys. So I think it was a complete misread for the Red Sox to bring him back, expect him to contribute, or expect to be able to move him and get something of value, because that just isn't the case. My fear now is that you bring back Bradley as a free agent because there's not going to be any market for him. Like, the Jackie Bradley thing, I'm good with at this point. But it doesn't seem like the Red Sox are good with it. It seems like the rest of the league is okay on taking a pass, but I wonder about them moving forward.
Are you upset that Chaim Bloom didn't try to go after more pitching prospects? Look at this farm system throughout the years with the Red Sox, and obviously, that's been a one glaring hole, and this year it's the pitching staff at the big league level. But you see a guy who is used to building up farm systems. Do you think it was a case of as you mentioned, you know, people not being available? Or were you upset they didn't go harder for that route to get more pitching in that farm system?
All right, so I've been really critical of Chaim Bloom really ever since he took over, because I don't think he's done a very good job so far. That being said, I'm going to defend him a little bit on this one, because, Alex, I just don't think that there was much out there. And let me rephrase that. I don't think the Red Sox had anything to trade outside of Bogarts, Devers, Vasquez, you know, if you want to really rip Chaim Bloom, you know, maybe you say, all right, well, then why wasn't Vasquez dealt for some pitching help? Like, maybe that's a fair second guess, you know, maybe. But I guess I'm not really ready to go there, because what truly did they have to deal to, you know, to bring in an impact young arm? And you look at this roster, there just isn't much. Like, even JD Martinez, like, all right, what is he going to get you? He's probably going to get you, you know, Connor Siebold and, I don't know, a lottery ticket guy, because he's an aging designated hitter who can opt out of his contract. You know, he's got injury concerns, you know, now with, you know, I mean, he hasn't had a very good season. Like, you know, so what is that guy going to get you? Like, I guess if you really want to rip Chaim Bloom, just come to me with, well, they could have traded X, but I don't really see that X that they could have traded. You know what I mean?
So based on what's left on the roster now, two big decisions in terms of prospects. They brought up Bobby Dalbec over the weekend. He hit his first home run Sunday. And then there's a report out today that Jaron Duran, who has been a star coming up through the system, kind of came out of nowhere. He won't be called up to fill that outfield spot opened up by Pilar. I think it's I saw who was playing left field tonight. I can't remember off the top of my head. It was one of the second basemen, not Arauz, the other one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, who cares? Peraza, I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Right, this is a forgettable roster right now. But how do you feel about the decision to call up Dalbec when they did and not call up Durant?
You should be calling up everybody that you can right now, because this is a true September. You know, give everybody a chance, give the kids a chance. You know, I don't want to see veteran players on this team right now outside of your core guys. Like, I don't want to see roster filler guys. I want to, you know, get Dalbec, you know, get his feet wet, get Duran, you know, up to the big league level. And, you know, I do think it is important to note that Dalbec was closer to the big leagues to begin the year than Jaron Duran. You know, Duran had just gotten to Portland last year. Dalbec had been spending time in Pawtucket. So, you know, I mean, and these guys didn't, I mean, they haven't had a minor league season. All right. They're playing these simulated games down in Pawtucket every day or every few days. But like, what is that really? You know, there has been no test for some of these guys. But I'll just say this, you know, if there's anybody double A and up and Duran is included in that, I want them up. I want them on the roster. You know, I want to see the Tanner Houck, the Brian Mottas, you know, Bobby Dalbec, Jaron Duran. You know, I don't want to see Jay Groom, and I don't want to see Tristan Casas at this point, because those guys were in single A. Like, if you're just going to throw them against big league pitchers, you know, I worry, or Jay Groom against big league hitters, you know, I worry about, you know, stunting their development. But if you've already played in double A and, you know, Duran falls under that category, give him a chance. You know, he doesn't have to play in it, you know, every day, but is it more than he's going to get at a simulated game of Pawtucket? Yes, I think that would help his development, not hurt it at this point. So I want to see as many of these kids who have reached double A on this big league roster and getting big league experience, you know, for the end of the, you know, until the end of the season, until the end of September, because why the hell not at this point? Right. And even if it doesn't go well, you chalk it up to, it was a different season. You didn't have a full minor league season. You know, don't, you know, keep your head up if you come up to the big league level and struggle. Like, that's okay. You'll be back. Don't worry. You know, we just wanted to get you some at-bats. We wanted to get you some innings. That's the way the Red Sox should be approaching this.
All right, two-part question to finish it up here. After the deadline, everything last week, who is your World Series favorite right now? And I asked you this on Sports Map Radio a couple weeks ago. You said, no, I'm curious if your opinion's changed. Going from top to bottom, could the Red Sox finish with the worst record and land Kumar Rocker?
I don't think they're going to finish with the worst record, but I would encourage them to do everything they possibly can. All right. You know, I mean, Pittsburgh is truly horrific. But, you know, this is also one of the benefits of bringing up one of the young, you know, bringing up as many kids as possible. You're not trying to win games here. This is all about player development. Hell, treat it like the minor leagues. Treat it like the Cape League. I don't care. You know, and see where you land. Hopefully you end up with the top five pick. You can get one of the kids from Vanderbilt. Maybe you don't get Rocker, but maybe you get Al Leiter's nephew or kid or whoever it is. You know, you get Jack Leiter, who was a first round pick a few years ago coming out of high school in New Jersey. So, you know, listen, do what you can, get the kids experience. Hopefully it breaks your way and you get, you know, high draft pick and you can draft some, you know, some pitching, please, any pitching. But, you know, I think Alex too, you know, this is, the baseball draft is becoming more of a sure thing, but it still isn't like the NFL draft or the NBA draft where there's that much of a difference between like the first and third player off the board. You know what I mean? Like you get a top five pick, like you still need to find a pitcher who can hit. You know, this isn't the NBA where it's like, well, it's a two player draft. Like, okay, and you got the third pick and you're screwed. You get the third or the fourth pick, there still should be a pitcher out there that hopefully you can identify. So I'm not as concerned about, you know, the first overall pick or anything like that. In regards to World Series champion, you know, like, I'm sorry, you still have to go with the Dodgers, right? They're still the best team in baseball. I know it's a boring pick. I know the Padres have done a lot. You know, they're really exciting. You know, my question is, you know, moving forward is like, what becomes of the Yankees? You know, they are certainly struggling right now. You know, what becomes of this September? Are teams going to start to pull away? You know, because right now, to me, it's the Dodgers and it's everybody else. And the Padres are working themselves into that conversation, but I still have a hard time buying them as a legitimate World Series team. They're fun. You know, they're really exciting. And no doubt they're a better team, you know, than they were at the beginning of the year. But you still have to pick that Dodgers team. They've been there. They've done that. They haven't won it. They certainly haven't won it. But they're the best team in baseball on paper. I'll go with them.
All right, Matt McCarthy from 98.5 The Sports Hub. He hosts the 98.5 Hardcore Baseball Podcast. I'm guessing you guys will have a trade deadline episode up soon. You can check that out on 98.5thesportshub.com. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time.
Guys, it's always good to be on with you. You know, hit me up anytime.
Appreciate it. All right, so there we go, Lebowitz. Some baseball talk we needed to get in. Probably the last baseball talk of the year, if we're being truly honest with ourselves here.
Yeah, it gets to a point where you look at this Red Sox team and you're like, what is there really to gather with this roster? They're so bad. Their pitching staff stinks. You kind of know who the players you want to keep around are. And I think Matt put it, you know, pretty well. The players that they didn't get rid of, there just wasn't any deal in place. There wasn't, you know, an exchange that could have been made. So we'll see what happens the rest of the year. Probably nothing good. And then the offseason, I'm sure there'll be more action and Chaim Bloom will, you know, really start taking the wheel.
Well, I want to get a quick Bruins thought in here. You know, by the time people listen to this, their season might be over. They, you know, game starts at 7. It's 5:25 right now as we're recording this. Who knows? By the time I get this up, they might have given up two goals already. But I think it would be a disservice if we didn't bemoan this pack of frauds. It's so sad that this core is going to go down as chokers. It really is, because there's some great players. I mean, Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara, two of the all-time greats to ever play in the league. And you throw Marchand and Krejci in there, who are also two great players. Rask is kind of his own conversation, but, you know, they won one with the greatest goaltender.
Pasternak.
Well, so let me finish here real quick.
Okay.
That core I mentioned, they won one with the greatest goaltending performance in postseason history from Tim Thomas. They then blew it against Chicago. They blew it against – they had another – it was like a Eastern Conference Finals where they had a 3-2 lead and they blew it. And then they blew a chance on home ice against St. Louis. And now there's a real chance they're going to blow it again after being the best team in the league. And I know things were weird, but they were weird for everybody. And, you know, it's kind of sad that this group is going to have that label attached to them. Now, when you mentioned David Pastrnak, I will say, to be fair, there is this young second core coming up in Pastrnak and McAvoy, and we'll see who the goaltender ends up being in that, whether it's Swayman, the kid from Maine, or whoever. The next group is here, and you would think, you know, the Yankees did this, the Spurs did this, Patriots didn't quite do it. But, you know, a lot of the great teams that have had sustained success – they won a title with the old and young core together, right? The Spurs won one with Robinson and Duncan. That's kind of what this could have been for the Bruins. I don't put Pastrnak in that Marchand, Bergeron, Chara, Krejci group because I think he is the superstar of the next unit, right? Mm-hmm. That next era of Boston Bruins hockey. So I'm not going to put the choker label on him, although he's not off to a great start, admittedly. But, it, you know, it's really sad that, you know, these great players and, you know, who've done so much for this team and really revitalized hockey in this city, they're going to walk away with one cup that ultimately isn't tied to any of them. It's all, you know, if you talk about the 2011 cup, that's Tim Thomas's cup first and foremost. So, you know, well, it's really unfortunate because this definitely feels like the last run.
Well, it definitely wasn't Tuukka Rask's cup. And I think a lot.
That's kind of his own thing in that narrative. But he's that Joker label.
Absolutely. And I think obviously you can say what you want about him leaving early during, you know, in the bubble. But that's something that's going to be brought up as well. This is an odd year, so I think it's unfair to look at how they were doing in the regular season and then judge where they're at in the playoffs and give them a label of chokers. They had a lot of weird stuff go on, you know, beyond COVID. So and Rask leaving was definitely one of those things. But you make a great point. You know, since 2010, when this core was really brought in and you had, you know, Chara and Bergeron, Krejci and Marchand, it's crazy to think that they're still intact in 2020. And there was only that one 2011 cup to show for. Obviously, they went to the cup twice, two other times. But yeah, it is underperforming because that's a hell of a lot of talent. That's a pretty well-rounded core right there. And although they were contenders pretty much every single year throughout that stretch, they had a hard time getting over that hump, and there were a lot of lapses, you know, along the way. So I don't think that's going to be the first thing that comes to people's mind when they think about that group. But this has been underwhelming. And if they do end up losing tonight, if they end up getting kicked out of this round and not making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, that's just going to, you know, make that narrative even louder, which is unfortunate. But I don't know how you can really deny it when you consider these past 10 years.
So, again, we're just going to keep it quick on the Bruins because they, you know, and you know, now that we've recorded this, calling it cursed, they're going to come back and win the series, and it's going to be one of the all-time great comebacks in Boston sports history.
I hope so. I hope that happens. I hope I'm wrong.
I would say, no, I mean, look, the way they've played these first couple games, if they win this series now, I mean, that's right up there with 28-3 in the 04 ALCS. I would.
Yeah. To go from losing by a combined score of 10-2 in those two games to winning out, yeah, that'd be huge. But a massive energy shift is needed for them to do that. And I don't know if they're there mentally.
10-2 really feels low for the way those games went.
It does, doesn't it? I said it out loud. I was like, that doesn't do it justice.
Surprised. I hadn't heard it phrased that way yet. I don't know why. And I was just like a little caught off guard, like 10? Is it really? Because I could have sworn they gave up like 7 goals in one of the games. It felt like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But. So. It doesn't do it justice for how brutal they were in those two games.
All right, I do want to wrap up. Actually, you brought this up. I'll give you the credit. You brought this up, and it's a good point, and it is worth talking about because, you know, I don't even want to say the entertainment industry. The world really lost, you know, a giant in Chadwick Boseman over the weekend, came out of nowhere. Obviously, Black Panther's the one, but he's in 42. He was in – I didn't even realize he was in Draft Day until the Browns tweeted about it. I know I'm missing some. He played Thurgood Marshall. I can't remember the name of the movie, but I know he played Thurgood Marshall.
I
thought it was Marshall. I didn't know if I was like.
He played James Brown in Get On Up. You want to talk about playing a cast of you know, incredibly well-known, historic, you know, transcendent figures. Thurgood Marshall, Jackie Robinson, and James Brown, and Black Panther. I mean, he's played a lot of iconic roles, and he was an excellent actor in everything that he was in.
And let's not forget his Saturday Night Live performance. I mean, one of the great guest hosts of the last 10 years, too. He was excellent. I know that's like a minor thing compared to the rest of
his I need to rewatch it. I need to watch that. I don't think I've seen it.
I think so many people struggle, especially like superhero actors, struggle on SNL. There really haven't been a lot of great guest hosts lately. His episode was really – and he came, I think – he was like a couple weeks before, a couple weeks after Tom Hanks, who obviously killed it.
Yeah.
So, no, but to go back to your point, you were saying, you know, Thurgood Marshall, Jackie Robinson, Black Panther, James Brown, you know, somebody said, you know, Chadwick Boseman played all these people. The only question left is who's going to play him, which is an interesting way to phrase it. But I mean, they're going to make a movie. They got to make a movie about him to know that he went through what he went through and everything's so public and everything leaks and there's no real secrets left anymore, especially in the entertainment industry. That he went by 4 years and nobody knew this is, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's literally unbelievable. I did not believe it. I spent, I think, 5 minutes after the news broke just Googling, like, how did I not know about this? Like, this had to have been a thing that he had colon cancer.
It really speaks. One of the reactions I had, you know, because I thought the same thing. Like, how do you keep that secret? One, it speaks to him wanting to keep it private and not wanting that undue attention, which, you know, I think that there's probably a lot of stress that comes with sharing that news publicly when you're a guy like Chadwick Boseman. But two, it also speaks to the people he surrounds himself with. To have a group that's not leaking that out, knowing that that would be, you know, front page headline news for a lot of entertainment, you know, conglomerates, it speaks to the people he surrounds himself with, which it, you know, obviously he's a good judge of character, and he has good character himself. This guy was going to children's hospitals and doing a lot of charitable work, and he carried himself in a really, really, you know, great way. He seemed like a good guy, and to know that he went through this since, what, 2016, 2017. He continued to accomplish what he accomplished and continued to stay in the limelight, knowing that, you know, he was dealing with stage 3 cancer. This wasn't, you know, a small thing. It really speaks to his character. And it's one of, you know, it's a sad story, but it's also one of the most interesting, intriguing stories that you'll see. It really is crazy how, you know, we didn't find out until he actually passed.
There's celebrities who kind of become legends. Like, they supersede their own celebrity, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it does. Supersede isn't the word I'm looking for, but they, you know, they're not necessarily a celebrity themselves, but just their being or are becomes a celebrity. And I think if he wasn't already, Chadwick Boseman, I mean, you know, the one I think was like Elvis, right? You hear stories about Elvis, they're just like, there's no way that's true. Right. He just did things that were, and it's kind of different. It's not a perfect comparison, but he just did things that were so massive to comprehend that no matter what you hear about him, you have to just stop for a second and wonder if it's true or not. And again, like, everything Chadwick Boseman did while he was dealing with this is just like, I will hear any story about him now and be like, yeah, you know, I have to check on that. I believe that, because just the capacity is clearly off the charts in terms of what he could handle and what he could do.
Yeah, he's become kind of a legend through this, which is, I guess,
so I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely, even more so, which is ironic because he played a legitimate superhero, and you know, he's in real life, and he is, you know, now this sort of iconic figure given what we know after he's passed away. There's one person that that I think a similar thing happened to, in which he passed away and no one knew that he was dealing with, you know, an illness until after he died. And I think that was David Bowie. I think David Bowie died, it must have been 5 years ago by now, and he had cancer. And I don't think anyone knew that he was dealing with it until he actually died. And David Bowie is, you know, a historic, transcendent figure, and someone who's considered a philanthropic person, very charitable, just all around good guy. And there's something there when you don't want your private life to be public or certain aspects of it, and you're that well disciplined and that well principled to be able to not tell everyone, to not try to get that sympathy, and all the while you're continuing to do what you do and you know, help people and obviously continue to work. There's not a lot you can really say about it. It's crazy. It really is wild. Again, one of the crazier stories you'll see.
I mean, Bowie's a good one. I was thinking of Freddie Mercury, who, you know, people always sort of knew he had AIDS, but he downplayed it until I think it was like, I don't know, like 2 or 3 months before he died. But, you know, but still, you know, there were whispers about it. This was nothing. There were some people that noticed Chadwick Boseman was losing weight, but, you know, celebrity losing weight that's not new. It's barely news. That happens all the time. I mean, nobody was like, oh, he's losing weight because he's sick. They just thought he was losing weight for a role or whatever. So,
and when you get criticized like that, like the initial reaction is like, yeah, I'm losing weight. Well, guess what? This is what's happening. And then you make that person feel awful, and it also teaches a lesson. Like, you don't know what someone's going through. But he didn't do that. And again, that speaks to his character and how he keeps things in perspective. Strong guy. Very strong guy. I commend him for sure.
I think that's a good way to close that conversation. Got anything else?
I think that does it. We got the Celtics, who played really well in game one. I think that's the only other thing going on, but I'm sure we'll hit on that next episode.
Well, yeah, I want to try to wait, you know, beginnings and ends of series to talk about teams. So
yeah,
episodes have a little more life. So although the way the Celtics played, we might get to that one pretty quickly.
So, hey, we'll see. We'll see if they keep it up for sure.
I got a relevant Celtics nugget. Did you see Jaylen Brown and Enes Kanter teaching Taco Fall to swim today?
That was, I can't believe I didn't think about that. That was the most endearing video I've ever seen in my life. I loved it. I loved that video. I don't think they're doing it correctly. I don't think that's an effective way to teach somebody to swim, but it really made me feel good about the Celtics. Like, it made me, I thought, like, this team is really, they're really in this together. Like, what a cohesive unit.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, it's more like, I consider it more of like a pool trust fall than actually teaching somebody.
Yeah, I mean, he can be in the deep end. He's not going to drown.
Right, that's the other thing. Good thing. He's not going to, yeah, he's going to be able to stand. The pool is going to be able to stand. So that'll do it for us on this episode. We'll have another show coming out soon, probably later this week, if not beginning of next week. You can follow us on Twitter, @CallingItPodcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com, under the podcast tab. I'd like to thank Matt McCarthy from 98.5 The Sports Hub for joining us to talk trade deadline. The Red Sox are just having a press conference now. Chaim Bloom saying the team loves Jackie Bradley, so that's, you know, fantastic. But anyway, for Alex Lovitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time.